It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Pittsburgh's new mayor, Bill Peduto, hit the ground running when he took office last month, and he needs to if he is going to begin building the city of the future he spoke about in his inauguration speech. Today, His Honor, Mayor Peduto, is joining us live in Studio A for the first of our monthly conversations on Essential Pittsburgh. Mayor Peduto, great to have you here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to be here.
And if you would like to join the conversation, our number is 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Mayor Peduto, I can tell you that your on-ice presence was missed at the Pittsburgh Celebrity Hockey Game to benefit the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation yesterday, but now that you're running the city, I'm sure you don't have as much time for your beloved sport of hockey.
Well, I get back on the ice this week. I've already let my team down by missing the first two games. I've been off the ice for 2 years, which is probably the longest that I've been off the ice in about 20, 25 years.
Can we interpret your decision to join us every month as an indication that you are working on your promise to make government operations more transparent?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, you know, we started off immediately with putting my schedule online, hiring a data and analytics person to create an open government system within city government, opening up the transition committee, not to the selected few, but to anybody who had an idea. And we intend to continue going in that route. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities to engage the community, but the best way to always do it is to go out into it. So even this weekend, I probably put in about, I don't even know, 14 hours just being out and about.
Well, we saw the video of you filling in the helping to fill in the pothole.
Yeah.
Those are becoming a problem.
Scott Township Road Crew, class of 84. That's me. So last time I filled a pothole was back in 30 years ago. But you know, it wasn't really to be out there to get the work done. In fact, if anything, I probably slowed down the progress of the guys that were doing it. It was really to show them, to thank them. We've had, in the past 5 weeks, the majority of our road crew and public works have been pulling 6 or 7 day work weeks for 5 weeks straight. We just have not had a break between the snow, the ice, and the potholes that come with the freeze and thaw. We're well over budget already on salt. We're going to stay over budget on overtime. And I just wanted to be out there in a way to show, hey, thanks. Last time I did it with coffee and donuts. This time it was by throwing a couple of loads of cold patch into the potholes along Negley Ave.
As long as you brought up the condition of the roads and the salt situation, a lot of people might be wondering, how did we end up running out of salt? What happened there?
Well, it's not only us. It's out throughout the East Coast. Part of it is when you have a system that is, you know, run by companies, companies limit the amount when the cost is higher to them. So we're not buying directly from the mines. There's a middleman involved. And when demand is high, the mines are charging more. We have a preset cost that we're going to pay throughout a season. The supplier ends up losing money for every ton they're selling us because that predetermined amount is lower than what they're paying the mine for the salt. So they sort of create a system where there isn't as much salt. There's salt out there. They're just not supplying municipalities throughout the East Coast with it. The second part of it happens, you know, there's only a certain amount that we can store. We only have the capacity to store up to a predetermined amount in areas. You can't leave it out. Once it's out and rain or snow hits it, it becomes useless. So what had happened was we weren't only getting hit by single storms. We were being hit where in a given night we had three fronts moving out. So we drop 1,000 tons for an inch at 7 p.m., and then at 2 a.m. we have another 2 inches coming in, and we drop another 1,000 tons, and then right at rush hour, and we've been getting these rush hour squalls on a continual basis, we get another one. So instead of having that one storm where you're able to drop 1,000 to 2,000 tons, we're dropping 3,000 tons on a consistent basis, and it's just the product of what this winter has been.
Mayor Peduto, we wanted to focus today mainly on your efforts to fill out your top staff positions. How well has your Talent City initiative worked? Are you pleased with the mix of local versus out-of-region hires and insider versus non-city worker?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in the process, and we've had, you know, before we took office, we filled the chief positions within the mayor's office, sort of to oversee it, and that came outside of the Talent City process. With the directors that we've been able to nominate at this point, we're probably about three quarters of the way done. We still have several major departments to announce, like the Department of Planning and Public Safety. We have good candidates in both. But at the same time, it's been a learning process as we've moved along. There's never been in American history, as I've been told, an attempt to go outside of the normal process of government for the hiring of the top administrative positions. This hasn't happened at a federal level, a state level, or a local level to this scale. So we have separated ourselves from the process. Through the hiring of professional companies that do this for Fortune 100 companies, have looked to make hiring based on merit. And they recommend back to us after we receive, over 1,400 resumes, the top 3 to 6 candidates for each of the positions. The mix has been between local, a lot from Pennsylvania, some national, and even in some cases international. For planning director, we had a person from Abu Dhabi who is a project manager in their planning department who had applied to be our planning director. And there have been others as well that have come in from Europe. But the final interview process really focuses in on a few of the candidates that get recommended. And other than, I think, one case, we've been able to use it fully and effectively.
Why have you still not named a public safety director? What is happening with that process?
Yeah, that one position I've had extra scrutiny on. So prior to coming into office, when we announced the chiefs, I had a candidate already picked, somebody who I wanted to go with. And just for reasons, not because of the position itself, but the ability to move into the city and things that were going on outside in their personal life at the time, and a priority to family, they weren't able to take the position. So we went through Talent City with that position, and I had my number one choice, and again found, because of reasons not being able to move into the city, wasn't able to get that person. In the case of public safety director, and unlike any other position, I'm not going with the second choice. So if I'm not able to get the first pick, then I'm starting the system from scratch. So we've redefined the definition of the position to have more accountability over not just public safety operations, but sort of like an Elliot Ness for city government. We have increased the salary to be able to get the net to go a little bit further. And we're focusing in different organizations like the FBI and others to be able to look nationally at a greater scale and starting from scratch. It was in my intent to make it the first position I hired. Unless I find the right candidate, it may be the last position I hire.
Media reports, which you and your administration have not challenged or corrected, have said that Mike Huss, the public safety director from the Ravenstahl administration, is a finalist for the job of public safety director in your administration. Given that Mr. Huss presided over the scandals involving the police department's secondary jobs pay and Mr. Harper's diversion of those funds, the Jordan Miles incident, the shooting of an unarmed driver in Highland Park by an officer who broke department policy, the young woman who had called for help against a domestic abuser only to have police leave the scene without talking to her, and so many others. How can reappointing Mr. Huss be justified?
Only in the same scope that every other director is being given, until such time that we can find somebody that is better, has more qualifications, better educated, better trained, more applicable to the criteria that we're looking for, the directors that are in those positions shall remain and have consideration to be kept. The goal with every position we're trying to hire is to do better. And until such time that we can find people that are in that position, the directors that were there have every right and ability to apply and be considered.
It's been about a year since Chief Harper resigned, and in that time, it's been roughly 9 months since you won the primary, virtually assuring your election as mayor. We've known for at least that long that there will have to be a new police chief, but it is the one high-profile position that you have not filled, even though this pick is the most important signal you'll give to the police department and the African-American community that you are serious about change and rebuilding the relationship between them. Why that delay?
Well, even during the campaign, I said that it would be a deliberate process that would last 6 to 9 months. And what I'm looking for is two tracks. One track, which is what are the criteria nationally? What do you look for when you look for a police chief? What type of background? What type of education and training? What type of experience? What kind of demeanor? And what are the standards that an urban police chief should have? And then at the same time, going out to the community in an outreach program saying, what is it you want out of your police chief? Until I have that public safety director filled in that position to help to lead that effort, then we're not even posting the position of police chief, and we haven't posted it yet.
So 6 to 9 months, I mean, can we wait that long for a new police chief in this city?
I would argue that we have to. I would argue that there is both a separation. There's a division between the Bureau of Police and the community right now, which needs to be healed. And unless the community is involved in the process of selecting that person, it's not going to be able to start off on the right foot. And I would argue that within the Bureau itself, there is a lack of morale as deep that I've seen since the days of the consent decree when the federal government came in and told us how our police department has to be run. And that lack of morale can only be built by building from within. That does not mean that you have to hire a police chief from within, but that you have to be able to have a police chief that's going down the ranks and listening all the way down to the rank and file and to the sergeants of what is needed to get this department up to a standard that every day when officers put on their uniforms that they feel proud. And I don't really view the time constraint of getting to that point to be the biggest criteria. There is so much work that has to be done within that bureau that I feel it's really making sure we have the proper standard. The public safety director, who is a top choice, followed by the selection process for a police chief, followed by the hiring of that chief and giving that chief the latitude to bring in the command staff around them to make these types of changes happen.
There are rumors circulating that you were poised to appoint a current member of the department to the chief's job but had to withdraw the idea. Yet there's been no news of any national search or any candidates from outside the region. With the relationship between our police and the African community, African-American community, at an all-time low, and with the department regarded as deeply troubled and in need of new leadership, as you've said, what is being done to recruit the best possible candidates from across the nation?
Well, it's going to follow the Talent City model, and it's going to follow a wide open process based on the criteria of what that best training, background, education, all the other components of finding that chief are, and then at the same time using that community process. Finding somebody who has the ability to mend relations between the community or finding someone who has the ability to allow the Bureau itself to operate in a truly professional manner, I don't think comes with the criteria of gender or race or any specific criteria. In fact, I would argue that if the choice was made and when it was made of promoting Nate Harper to chief, they used race, the Ravenstahl administration, as a way of saying, now we have someone that will be able to work within the community. And what we found is we've actually gone back. You talk to the folks out in Zone 5 in Homewood and East Liberty and ask them if things have improved in the past 8 years. You ask people in the Hill, has there been an improvement between police relations and community or in the Hilltop communities or in the North Side? And they'll tell you no. It's gone the opposite way, that during the past 7 years, we've actually caused a canyon to erupt. So it really is finding the right person who can build the right police force around them. And what that means is the favoritism, the cronyism, the one group over the other group, the officers who feel that they can't be whistleblowers because if they blow the whistle on this person, it's going to be repercussions brought against them. That whole old boy network has to be stripped away, and it has to be rebuilt with a trust that comes from the command staff by the rank and file, that they know that there will be discipline, but the discipline will be even-handed. And that has to be backed by a mayor who will stand behind a police chief to let them do what needs to be done.
From what you're saying, it sounds like you almost have no choice but to go outside of the department in order to avoid the idea that there will, that the status quo will remain in place, and in order to show that the members of the department that there is going to be a change.
It may be the criteria that provides the greatest level of independence. I would argue it in the same way that, you know, when talking with members of the FOP about the needed changes with off-duty work, the work that now has been the focus of a federal grand jury and the indictment of a police chief. Going the same route is not an option. Going the same route will assure that the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police is under consent decree by the FBI again, and that losing all options for off-duty work would be the reality. There has to be change. It has to occur. It has to be supported by the rank and file, and it has to come from within. When I talk privately with officers, what I find is that they're the ones that are asking for it the most. They understand that the system that's happening right now is very unfair, that promotions that happen where officers jump rank over those that have worked and taken their test and been on that promotion list creates devastating morale problems within the Bureau, because the favoritism and the cronyism becomes the criteria by which that Bureau operates. Every day that we are in that mayor's office, it's like opening another drawer and finding a mess and just shutting it halfway and trying to figure out what month it is that we're going to get around to that next one. But within the police bureau itself, it is not an issue about when do we hire the next chief. It is not a question of whether that next chief is black or white or man or woman. It is a fundamental question of hiring somebody who can bring around cultural change within the police bureau.
Safe to say you're going outside the department?
Safe to say that I'm looking outside the department. Safe to also say that I wouldn't just not consider somebody from within because they're actually within.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My guest is new Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. In the first of our regular monthly discussions with him, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. If you have a question or comment regarding the mayor's cabinet selections and how they can reflect the future of Pittsburgh, give us a call. Again, 412-246-2002. Mayor Peduto, your pick to lead the city's budget office withdrew his name from consideration Friday after some city council members expressed concerns about his financial background, $83,000 owed to the IRS. What happened here? What kind of concerns does this raise about the kind of background checks and vetting process that you have in place?
Well, first off, we have a background check process that's done through Talent City, which is done through a national, international company. So this wasn't a surprise. We knew about it. Dr. Kiley actually brought it up during the interview process himself. And on top of that, I am running my own background check using opposition research out of Chicago that I use for political campaigns, that firm that is actually associated with Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, does his background check. So we have three levels of background checks in a city that has never had background checks. So Dr. Kiley is someone that I've known since 1991. Anybody who knows him in the East End would tell you he's a Boy Scout. He is somebody whose integrity and honesty has not been questioned. He is also an entrepreneur who entered into a contract for a very large contract with a partner who ended up taking the information that he created, partnering with somebody else, and went through a 10-year legal battle over that contract and appeals process, all the while involving the IRS. Not the IRS never went after him. All these reports that he was a scofflaw and he wasn't paying, the IRS was involved from the very beginning of that process, through the process, and at such time that the settlement was made by the courts, immediately went into a settlement about how much he would owe on it. He had no idea whether it was going to be a million, whether it was going to be 200,000, or whether it was going to be in the tens of thousands that he would be able to receive through the court system. And then has paid with penalty and interest on that settlement from the time that it was decided. There was never a charge against him. There was never anything else, but everyone just assumed that he just wasn't paying his taxes. And unfortunately, some council members wouldn't even meet with him because of the reports that were coming out of the papers. That's why I said it was politicized. It was fed to the media as, you know, this guy doesn't pay his taxes, and it never had the full vetting, and he never even had the opportunity to explain it to certain council members. That's unfortunate. That's also politics. And if you're going to be in the big league, you got to be able to live in that world, and that's the reality. The unfortunate part for the people of Pittsburgh, Dr. Kiley is recognized as one of the preeminent experts in performance-based and outcome-based budgeting. He has been hired as a lead consultant to the state of Minnesota and to the state of New York by their governors to create performance-based budgeting models. He's been recognized by the White House for the technology advances he's done in outcome-based budgeting. He is the former head of the Pennsylvania Economy League, a PhD who teaches this at the University of Pittsburgh, and would probably have been hands down the best person to take Pittsburgh from a cronyism-based model of budgeting to a professional model.
So there was no pressure for him to withdraw his name from pressure, coming from you?
No. I told him in the same way that I spoke earlier that as long as he decided to stay in the process, I had his back because I knew he was the best person for this job, hands down.
Digging a little deeper into the city's workforce, your efforts to create a buyout program were thwarted at nearly every turn. Are you pleased with what you have to offer now, and are people taking the offer?
We won't find out until the end of the month what the numbers will be. I expect it to be a rather significant number. A lot of the positions that we'll take it, we're not going to fill. We're looking to make this not just a net revenue for the cost, but actually be able to save in the city's budget for a long-term basis. We have a lot of middle management that doesn't need to exist. We have managers in certain departments that don't have employees, so they manage themselves, but they're paid manager salaries. And instead of going through the hurdles of legal battles for years to come in order to try to right-size what we need to do in city government, we chose to be able to offer people the carrot. And we're going to lose some good talent along with that. I realize that, and a lot of institutional knowledge. But we're looking to create a different city government, and we're looking to go in a different direction. And in some cases, we're not even looking to upgrade the system we have. We're looking to allow it to die on the vine and create a new system at the same time.
Looking back at this first month of your administration, it's been filled with all sorts of challenges, fighting with council over staffing, battling the weather. You've headed off to Washington, D.C. for meetings. When can we expect to see some initiatives coming out of your office to begin to build this city of the future that you've spoken about in your inauguration speech?
Well, it's happened. I mean, it didn't wait till we took office. I was already in contact with Google Fiber back in December, met with them in Boston. You know, there had been a three-year lapse by the previous administration of never even contacting them. I mean, and what we're doing with data analytics and opening up government and new apps that are being formed and the Twitter account for 311, all these are small little parts of a much larger puzzle. The change of departments, we've completely overhauled the finance department and put the Office of Management and Budget under the mayor's office and separated out the treasury so there's more checks and balances so things like the police scandal can't happen. We have completely revamped the Department of Parks and Recreation and took the parks part out, putting it under public works and making Parks and Rec really more about urban recreation for seniors and youth. I don't think there's a department or a board authority or a commission at this point that we haven't had an instrumental change in over the past 6 weeks. But the changes that people will see will happen when they notice that their garbage is being picked up better or that their streets are being paved without the political decision-making or the potholes are being done without having to pay loads of overtime and the maintenance programs are actually enforced. We've actually been able to change and stop what Alcosan was proposing on a gray solution to the largest public works project in this region's history. And getting the White House involved and working with our congressional delegation and our county exec after 5 years of it going down the wrong path, averting what would have been devastating and huge difference. So on large scale things that people may not notice and the small details, I would say we've been very hands-on in changing a lot of the operation sides. But the bigger side will occur not just within the police bureau but throughout city government when we change the culture of city government in Pittsburgh.
Wanted to get to a Twitter comment from Nettie, who writes on Twitter, when will new boards be assigned?
Well, we started with the task force, so the education task force, which is through an ordinance of city council and very prescribed what we had to do, and also with the summer youth employment task force. I have made one announced position, that is State Representative Ed Gainey from the East End to be on the URA board. And hopefully later this week and by the end of next week, the major boards will be filled.
And by the way, Nettie said she was so glad to hear you on 90.5 WESA. We were so glad to have you and look forward to our regular monthly visits with you, Mayor Padilla.
Yeah, and just aside, but while we're on the air, I really like the idea of working on one issue. There's so many different things that we can talk about, but since we're going to be talking every month, having one issue and then having people be able to get involved as well on that issue.
And we will include more people in the future, but this being the first visit, we wanted to make sure we got as many of our questions in as we could. Again, Mayor Peduto, thanks for spending your time here, being so gracious with your time and taking time to answer those questions.
Thanks, Paul.
You bet. Mayor Bill Peduto, our guest here on 90.5 WESA on Essential Pittsburgh. Coming up, consultant Sasha King on career journaling, and our sports guy, Bob Dvorak, on Jason Collins' history-making NBA appearance. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.